On January 26th and 27th, 1999, at a company called Laboratory Corporation of America, LabCorp, near Raleigh, North Carolina, the semen samples from the crime scene, the torn panties, the bed sheets, and the vaginal swabs, were tested against the DNA profiles of Ron Williamson and Dennis Fritz. A DNA expert from California, Brian Raxel, had been hired by the attorneys for Ron and Dennis to monitor the testing. 2 days later, Judge Landreth delivered the news that Mark Barrett and many others had been dreaming of. The results of the DNA tests had been analyzed and confirmed at LabCorp, and the semen from the crime scene excluded Ron Williamson and Dennis Fritz. As always, Annette was in close contact with Mark Barrett and knew the testing was underway somewhere. She was at home when the phone rang. It was Mark, and his first words were, "Annette, Ron is innocent." Her knees buckled and she almost fainted. "Are you sure, Mark?" "Ron is innocent," he said again. "We just got the lab results." She couldn't talk for crying and promised to call him back later. She sat down, and for a long time she wept and she prayed. She thanked God over and over for his goodness. Her Christian faith had sustained her through the nightmare of Ron's ordeal, and now the Lord had answered her prayers. She hummed a few hymns, cried some more, then began calling family and friends. Renee's reaction was almost identical. They made the 4-hour drive to Veneta the next day. Waiting there were Mark Barrett and Sarah Bonnell. A little celebration was in order. As Ron was brought into the visitor's room, Dr. Curtis Grundy happened by and was invited to hear the good news. Ron was his patient, and they had developed a close relationship. After 18 months at Veneta, Ron was stable, making slow progress, and putting on weight. "We have some great news," Mark said, addressing his client. "The lab results are back. The DNA proves you and Dennis are innocent." Ron was instantly overcome with emotion and reached for his sisters. They hugged and wept and then instinctively broke into "I'll Fly Away," a popular gospel hymn they had learned as children. Mark Barrett immediately filed a motion to dismiss the charges and turn Ron loose, and Judge Landreth was anxious to address the issue. Bill Peterson objected and wanted further testing on the hair. A hearing was scheduled for February 3rd. Bill Peterson opposed the motion, but he could not do so quietly. Before the hearing, he was quoted in the Ada Evening News as saying, "DNA testing of the hair samples, which was not available in 1982, will prove they were responsible for Carter's murder." The statement rattled Mark Barrett and Barry Scheck. If Peterson was cocky enough to make such public claims at such a late hour, was it possible that he knew something they didn't? Did he have access to the hair taken from the crime scene? Could the samples be switched? There were no empty seats in the main courtroom on February 3rd. Ann Kelly, a reporter for the Ada Evening News, was fascinated by the case and was covering it thoroughly. Her front-page reports were being widely read, and when Judge Landreth settled behind his bench, the room was crowded with policemen, courthouse employees, family members, and local lawyers. Barney was there, seeing nothing but hearing more than anyone. He was thick-skinned and had learned to live with Judge C's opinion from 1995. He would never agree with it, but he couldn't change it. Barney had always believed that his client had been framed by the police and Peterson, and it was wonderful watching their flimsy case unravel in the spotlight. The lawyers argued for 45 minutes, then Judge Landreth wisely decided to complete the testing of the hair before making a final decision. "Do it fast," he told the lawyers. To his credit, Bill Peterson promised, on the record and in open court, to agree to a dismissal if Williamson and Fritz were excluded by DNA testing of the crime scene hair.